Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Going to read this morning from the final chapter of Canto 3. It's chapter 33. And the speaker is Devahuti, going back to 25. Devahuti made a request of her son, please. Help me overcome undue attachment, overly attached position to the bodily conception of life, and with that, family and bewilderment that comes from all of that. And so he's instructed her consistently for 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32. 8 chapters just addressing that one question. So, the beginning of this chapter, her illusion is gone. And she's now just offering prayers to, specifically it says, to please him. And he's smiling, hearing her prayers. And it's not the words that she's speaking that's pleasing, because it sounds like flattery. It's the love that she has. And I find this, it's similar, because we just spent so much time in Dwarka. We discussed a little bit last night. The kind of love that persons like Devahuti has is, Kunti says it's bewildering that he does what he does. And I find it bewildering that on the one hand they can understand Krishna as the personality of Godhead, or in this case, Kapila Dev is the personality of Godhead. At the same time, seems like a conflicting emotion. At the same time, she understands very clearly that he's the source of everything. And the source of everything, who she clearly understands, is her son. It's, he who is unborn is born. He who does nothing makes the creation happen. It's bewildering. It's contradictory. It's beyond material estimation. So how to enter into such a mystery is only possible through devotion, and otherwise not possible. So such devotees as Devahuti and Queen Kunti, they're disclosing truths about the personality of Godhead, even though he's their nephew or son. Just picture in your mind that situation as we're hearing from her. He's on a raised platform, she's seated on the floor before him, and she's offering praises to her son as the personality of Godhead. And she's really clear about his position as the personality of Godhead, and attributing the relief of her grief at the loss of her husband and undue family attachment to her son, the personality of Godhead. It's marvelous. something certainly to marvel at. And he hasn't really, and how did he do it? He hasn't, like Prabhupada speaks of, one Swami brought on a stage his disciple and he touched the man on the forehead and the man became enlightened and the Swami fell to the ground like an electrical discharge. He got zapped and it's cheating. He removed his maya by sound vibration. Within that sound vibration was transcendence. And through that message of transcendence, which she heard from him directly or through disciplic succession, just like we're doing, through disciplic succession, the influence of maya can be taken away. And what's the symptom that maya's influence is taken away? Well, there's several symptoms. Singular focus and the distraction or attraction to the temporary, distraction by the temporary, and thinking and contemplating how this pleases me and that doesn't please me, and I want to enjoy this way and I want to achieve that thing, and you know, material life, it's gone. Now, what do you do when that's gone? Because that's what people do. You, whatever the nature awarded to you in this lifetime, the body in this type, that type, whatever the type, you engage in loving service to Krishna. And until that time comes, you follow the injunctions of scriptures under direction and authority and strive for that stage where there's only one thing. So you dedicate those things to that one thing. Practicing to achieve that stage of purity, perfection. So she's there, perfection. I mean, going way back to the question that she asked, Kapila Dev was astonished at her question. Why are you asking this question? You're my mother. You're pure devotee and you know these things. So you're just asking for others' benefit. In any case, she's the prayer that she begins with is text 2, and we're going to discuss text 3. Text 2 she points to Brahma. So Brahma is the source, is the architect or engineer, is the, you could say, the creator of the universe, but the sub-creator of the universe under the authority of Krishna. And I'll just read the verse. Brahma is said to be unborn because he takes birth from the lotus flower which grows from your abdomen. Well, she's speaking to her son, who's seated on a raised seat, saying, Lord Brahma is born from the lotus that grows from your abdomen. While you lie in the ocean at the bottom of the universe. But even Brahma simply meditated upon you, whose body is the source of unlimited universes, which is Mahavishnu. So, she's not a scholar. She's not a Brahmana rishi. She's a mother. But through her devotion, she understands the nature of the personality of Godhead. And then comes this feature of his lila, and specifically the feature of his lila that she's focusing on is the lila of creation. Now, we don't normally speak of or think of creation as a lila, but this third canto, earlier specifically, Brahma's activities of creation and so forth, it's specifically described as, in the Bhagavatam, as his lila. It's one of his secondary lilas. And then there's primary lilas, what he does when he enters into that creation of his, and he performs transcendental pastimes. But it's quite a transcendental pastime to manifest universes. Nobody can do that. Unless they're so empowered by the one who can do that. And then he can gift that power to whoever he likes. But he's the only one that can do that. Like Prabhupada's comment about people worried with the atomic bomb, they might blow up the Earth planet. And Prabhupada just laughed. He said, they can make some holes, but they can't blow up the planet. You know, their potency isn't like that, even with the biggest atomic bomb you can think of or create. Not sufficient. And even if they could, it's a power given to them. But they can't. So now, this morning's verse, text 3. My dear Lord, same as Kunti's prayers, although personally you have nothing to do, you do. You have distributed your energies in the interactions of the material modes of nature. That's not just saying you invested your energies in to make the creation. You've invested your energies in the material modes of nature. Each of the three of them and the mixture of them can't do anything without being invested with the potency of Krishna to do something. Even the modes of nature. Meaning, here's a practical example. At the time of cosmic annihilation, the modes of nature go dormant. They exist, but they're not active. They go dormant. And the way that they become dormant is Mahavishnu withdraws his time energy. Well, actually, he doesn't do it. Rama Devi, who sent the time energy, withdraws her time energy. And when you unplug time energy from material creation, it goes flat. It's just like all these people that have these, you know, Santa Clauses and different things. You know, at night they pump them up. And then they let the air out, and it's just like lying on the ground, flat. The form, the elements are there, but it's, you know, there's no Santa Claus or reindeer or whatever the thing is. So the whole material creation, by withdrawal of the time energy, it goes back into dormant state. The modes aren't active. And then the other direction, time for creation. So Mahavishnu's glance, and with the glance, the living entities and the time energy, and then the modes get activated. And dharma, the karma, which was dormant, becomes activated. And the material elements start to separate. And they cling to the living entity. And so forth. You know, it's remote control. He's doing nothing. His energies are doing everything. Well, the only thing he's doing is he's willing. That's all he does. Icha. Shakti. And then bhavati. Just, it all happens. This is called those that have identified the teachings of Vyasadeva is called Shakti Parinama Vada. Vada means doctrine. Shakti means potency. And Parinama means transformation. His teaching is everything is a transformation of the energies of the energetic. Then along come the impersonalists that say they accept the authority of Vyasadeva, and they come up with a different idea than Vyasadeva's idea. Shame on them. That's cheating. They say there's no potency. Because if you have potency, then you have at least two things, or many things. You have the potent and there's potency. But Mayavad doctrine says there's only one thing, and so you just dismiss potencies. Although, it's right in the Upanishads that says there's potencies. We're going to hear about that in just a minute. Let's do it. I didn't even get through the verse. You have distributed your energies in the interactions of the material modes of nature, and for that reason, the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the cosmic manifestation take place. My dear Lord, this is her son, you are self-determined and are the supreme personality of Godhead for all living entities. For them, you created this material manifestation. Although she previously said he does nothing. Krishna says, I created Chaturvarnamaya Shrishtam Guna Karma Vibhagas. I created this Varnashram system, but yet I'm the non-doer. I did it, but I didn't do it. Because he does through his energies. So, for them you created this material manifestation, and although you are one, your diverse energies can act multifariously. This is inconceivable to us. Let's step back. And Srimad Bhagavatam is said to be, one of the things it's said to be, is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Yes? And Vedanta Sutra is a capsule, sutra-like presentation of all the Vedas, and specifically the Shruti portion of the Vedas. And the Shruti portion of the Vedas includes, primarily, the Upanishads. So now what Prabhupada does in the purport is he touches the Upanishad verse, which Vedanta Sutra is the summarization of, which Bhagavatam is a commentary on. This is a commentary on a verse from Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Let's hear the purport. The statement made in this verse by Devahuti that the absolute truth has many diverse energies, although he personally has nothing to do, is confirmed in the Upanishads. So here's a quiz question. What's that verse from the Upanishads? Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Quoted all the time. That's a different one. He's going to say that in the next line. Parasha. Parasha shaktis vividaiva shruyate sobhaviki jnana balakriyacha. Right? You've heard that one? Parasha shaktir. Parasya Shaktir, this is Shvetashvatara Upanishad, it's one of the core Upanishads, says, guess what, Mr. Mayavadi? The Absolute Truth has Shaktis. Parasya Shakti. Vividaiva Shruyate Swabhavaki, it's his own. We have a Bhagavad Gita. Can you look up 3:23, Bhagavad Gita, it's quoted. Swabhavaki Jnana Bala Kriya. Jnana Bala Kriya. In order to have activity, you have to have Jnana Shakti, Bala Shakti, and Kriya Shakti. Kriya Shakti is kind of obvious. Kriya means the energy of activity. But activity has to be directed. Jnana Shakti. And you have to have strength, Bala Shakti. If you're going to be a creator, if you're going to be Vishnu, you've got to have potencies. And these are three categories. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his commentary, following Jiva Goswami's commentary on Brahma Samhita, with the glance, along with the time energy and the living entities, there's also jnana and bala, shaktis. We commonly just hear these two things, the living entity and time. But there's other potencies. Why not? Because Rama Devi knows what the desire, the icha of Mahavishnu is. So she assists him. She has her subpotencies. She's his internal potency, and she has her subpotencies, and off they go. He just desires, his internal potency makes the arrangement for his desire. And this is a pastime which his internal potency is assisting. It's the pastime of creation. So jnana and bala are sent with the glance of Mahavishnu. So now, the Upanishads are speaking about the absolute truth. Commonly it's the pronoun tat or saha. So you don't know what that is. What that is the absolute truth, and that has transcendental potencies, parasya shaktir. And swa bhavaki means it's really important. He doesn't draw upon anything outside of himself. It's himself. We're not like that. No, you're cold. You need some energy outside yourself. Or you want a friend. You need something outside yourself. Whatever it is you desire, soft or hard, you need something outside yourself. And that something outside yourself is the potency of the absolute truth. We're dependent upon the absolute truth for everything. Air. You name it. We're dependent. And the whole world is moving on the false sense of independence. Not just, you know, nations and groups of people and individuals and families and dogs and cats, and you know, everything is moving on this illusion of independence. It's just the rebellious spirit against Krishna. When that's gone, the sense of independence is gone, then one can see things as they are. You can see things as Krishna sees things. So that's why we have scriptures. We see things, we can hear things as Krishna sees things. And then we can see things as Krishna sees things. Jnana Chakshusha or Shastra Chakshusha. But if one's false ego is strongly operative, then one can't see. One can't hear, and one can't see. And therefore bhakti is necessary, not just knowledge. Because knowledge, you're going to get it wrong. It's going to pass through that false ego filter and the modes of nature filter. And you're going to get it wrong. And you're going to say, this is truth. And live your life accordingly, and you know, carry a stick and hit other people that don't see truth the way you see it. Material life. In the name of, you know, spiritual conquest or something. So we'll go on with the purport. I didn't get very far. There is no one greater than him. You said it before. What's the verse? Nityo nityanam chaitana chaitananam eko bahunam yo vidati kama, that saha, that absolute truth, is amongst eternals, is the supreme eternal. Amongst the conscious living beings, he's the supreme living being. That one is maintaining all the others, and that the way that one is maintaining all the others is through his potencies. There is no one greater than him, or on an equal level with him, and everything is completely done by his energy, as if by nature. You know, mechanistic science. There's only one thing, and that's matter and the laws that govern matter, and there isn't anything else. Everything can be explained by matter and the laws governing matter, period. That's the absolute truth for the mechanistic scientist. Well, where did the matter come from, and where are the laws that govern matter, and what controls the laws that govern matter? Don't be silly. That's the absolute truth. That's God. Huh? Matter? Don't ask where matter came from. That's God. That's the one thing that there is. Matter and the laws governing matter, period. And everything can be explained according. Matter and the laws governing matter. That's science. We try to discover the laws governing matter. Because we want knowledge. We want a livelihood, really, but we want knowledge. And God's out of, you don't need God. Just one thing. If you want to get a degree at our learning institution, you have to say it. Even if you don't believe it, you have to say it. Otherwise, you get an F. You can't say matter came from God and the potency invested in matter comes from God, and you get an F. You'll never graduate from our institute. Go ahead, say it. Everything's matter and the laws governing matter, and that's it. Okay, you get an A. Here are some of the laws. Okay, good. Go to graduate school. It is understood herein, therefore, that although the modes of material nature are entrusted to different manifestations like Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, each of whom is particularly invested with different kinds of power, the Supreme Lord is completely aloof from such activities. Remote control. He does what he doesn't do through his potencies. Devahuti is saying, this is Prabhupada's purport, he's paraphrasing to help us understand, quote, although you personally are not doing anything, comma, your determination is absolute. What does that mean? There is no question of your fulfilling your will with the help of anyone else besides yourself. With a capital Y. He's not, as we do, call upon energies outside of ourselves, which are his energies. He doesn't do that. It's his energies. You know, it's natural projection. We think he's like us. Wrong. He doesn't require, this is, his will is absolute. He doesn't require anything outside of himself. And there's another part of his will is absolute. What's that? You are, in the end, the supreme soul and the supreme controller. Your will, therefore, cannot be checked by anyone else. So anyone else that has some potency, where'd they get that potency? From the source of potency. So he has a will. Who wins? He was the source of potency. Is it like the Digvijay Pandit that had this debate with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? And when he spoke 100 verses in glorification of the Ganga, and he made some mistakes, and Lord Chaitanya and Nimai Pandit asked him, what are the qualities and the faults? Well, it's only qualities, there's no faults. There's no faults. The goddess Saraswati has given me this benediction because I'm her devotee, that I'll speak everything perfectly. So there's no faults. So Nimai Pandit pointed out the faults. And he was speechless. And Digvijay Pandit was never speechless. He always had something to say. But he was speechless. And he totally humiliated. The boys were laughing, Nimai Pandit's students. And he said, no, don't laugh. He's a great person. You don't laugh at a great person. Come back tomorrow and we'll have some more discussion. So Digvijay Pandit went home, or went to wherever he spent the night. And he was praying to Goddess Saraswati, how did this happen? You gave me this promise. And so in a dream, she said, this is my master. And I can't have you defeat my master. You're puffed up. Because you're puffed up, you can't recognize my master as my master. So you go back tomorrow, you fall at his feet, and you beg forgiveness, or you're finished. So he went back the next day and begged forgiveness. Mahaprabhu just smiled. So the message is, he cannot be defeated. The Sanskrit is avitata. Avitata. Word for word is not futile. His will can never be overruled by somebody else's will. His will is infallible. His will is absolute. We have some will. It's not absolute. It's dependent. And if Krishna wants our will to prevail, it'll prevail. If Krishna doesn't want our will to prevail, it won't prevail. Man proposes, God disposes. And if God says no, it's no. We can propose. I want to do really well in my exam. Your exams are over now, right? And look at you, your students here. Don't look behind you. Did you have exams before Christmas vacation? No? They come after? Oh. So you want to do well in your exams. I've had students tell me, you know, I prepared and prepared and I prepared, and when I sat down to take my exam, my mind went blank. And then other times, I didn't prepare so well that all the answers came into my mind. Man proposes, God disposes. His will is infallible. Avitata. Abhisandhihi means determination, similar to will. His determination, that's what's stated in this purport. His determination is absolute, Devahuti is saying. He wants, that's it. And he doesn't require anything outside of himself, that's one. And it'll never fail, two, absolute. Not true for any other entity, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, or any one of us, or any the man in the moon. Absolute. There's only one absolute. It only makes sense. There's got to be only one absolute. When the Yamadutas went back to Lord Yamaraj, they were bewildered. They said, this never happened before. Who can stop death? Does this mean that there's a second Lord? Their reasoning is, that would be really problematic, because supposing the two lords don't agree. whose will is going to prevail? So if you think we can understand this, please tell us. And he said, no, there's only one Lord. I'm his servant. The Lord of death operates according to the will of the absolute person. And then he lists the Mahajans that can understand that. And by following the footsteps of the Mahajan that can understand that, we can also come to the position of understanding it. You know, at least the possibility is there. That's what's happening here. Devahuti is such a personality. We can learn everything we need to know about the Absolute from her, who just happens to be her son, because of her pure devotion. Next. The Supreme Lord can check others' plans. As it is said, man proposes and God disposes. But when the Supreme Personality of Godhead proposes, that desire is under no one else's control. He is absolute. We are ultimately dependent on Him to fulfill our desires, but we cannot say that God's desires are also dependent. That is His absolute power. Whoops. That is His inconceivable power. That which may be inconceivable for ordinary living entities is easily done by Him, in spite of His being unlimited. He has subjected Himself to being known from the authoritative scriptures like the Vedic literature. Interesting statement, huh? He has subjected Himself to being known. I mean, the Vedas come from Him. So it's by His potency that one can know Him through the Vedas. But then one has to receive that knowledge of the Vedas in the proper way. Otherwise, you won't. You reach some other conclusion. Lots of people reach some other conclusion. Most people reach some other conclusion because they don't follow that system that He gives for receiving the Vedas. As it is said, Shabda Mulatvat, : He can be known through Shabda Brahma, or Vedic literature. Well, connected with bhakti. But how the Vedic literature can reveal Krishna, and not otherwise. I'm pausing. During the Tattva Sandarbha seminar, there was a girl from Brandeis University that had come, along with the devotees from Boston, and she was a confused, sincere, but quite confused person. And she left. And, you know, she left because of her confusion. But one of the issues... She had never been to a temple that had deities, and there are these, you know, beautiful, large Radha Krishna, boy, a Jagannath is big, and Gaudatai. So she came after a class and said, when I was raised in China, I didn't have the opportunity to come in contact with Christianity. Now at the university, I've come in contact with Christianity. And Christianity says, you shouldn't worship idols, and you have idols here, so I'm uncomfortable. You have any suggestion for me? So, you know, different person, how to answer that question, respond to that question, depends on the person and the circumstance. But it comes back to this topic. But what I said was, you may be interested to know that the same statement is made in the Vedas, that you shouldn't worship idols. And let's take a look at, you know, where that message comes from in the Bible. It's in the Old Testament. And Moses said, don't worship graven images. And he went to get the Ten Commandments, and he came back, and they're worshiping a golden calf. That's a graven image. That's not to be done. You don't just, out of your fertile imagination, come up with something and worship that something. That's a no-no. And deity worship or archana process is coming directly from the scripture. And you do that which is coming directly from the scripture, and that's a yes, yes, not a no, no. And I said, just like, here's another one, just like you've begun practicing Christianity, so the Bible is not just a book, it's called the Holy Bible, right? So what's holy about it? Why is it different than Harry Potter or your textbooks at school? What makes it holy? It's revealing God. It's the revealed word that's holy. But what's it made up of? Trees, cotton, minerals, and a few other things. Probably these days a bunch of plastic, petroleum. Is that holy? Now there's the deity. What's it made up of? What makes it holy? As opposed to an idol. It's revealing God. And it's from the authorized scriptures that reveal deity worship is different than idol worship, which is not to be done. And she's a college student, so I think she could understand what I was saying. But when the mind becomes disposed towards X, you can only see X. Even if you hear it, some explanation that, well, X isn't the full picture. You can only hear X. If it's consistent with X, you can hear it. If it's not consistent with X, you can't hear it. I think that's what happened. But so how does this connect with this? Wood, stone, and metal, these are energies of Krishna. And Krishna can manifest himself as in the scripture, although the elements are material. Trees, cotton, minerals, and plastic. He can manifest himself. And we revere it all over the world with different, you know, the Korah and the Turan and the holy books. They're revered by the people who hold this as God's word or the word of God, word about God. Then it's revered. It's holy. See, he can engage his potencies however he likes, and you follow his potencies how he likes, and you can connect with him. But if you don't see that connection, it's kind of simple. If you don't see that connection, you're Maya. You're going to see it separate from him. That's one of the chapter sloki verses of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. To see things existing separate from the source of those things and having value unto themselves, that's my illusory potency. Lord Vishnu says to Lord Brahma. So if you want to get out of Maya, which was Devahuti's question, chapter 25, you have to hear without filters. And unfortunately, we have filters. So it takes some time. It has to be sustained over time with the eagerness to become purified, to receive transcendence. She is eager. She went to the right source. She's now relieved. Last paragraph. Why is the creation made? That's a good question, a common question. I mean, people ask it in different ways, but why? I was introduced to somebody at a Rath Yatra 2 years ago. Chinese, elder Chinese lady started to chant Japa. It's pretty rare. And she said, I just have one question. Why creation? Answer. Since the Lord is the supreme personality of Godhead for all living entities, he created this material manifestation for those living entities who want to enjoy or lord it over material nature. As the supreme Godhead, he arranges to fulfill their various desires. Eko bahunam. It is confirmed also in the Vedas. Oh, there it is. Eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman. : The Supreme One supplies the necessities of the many living entities. There is no limit to the demands of the different kinds of living entities, and the Supreme One, the Supreme Personality Godhead, alone maintains them and supplies them by his inconceivable energy. So, two things and I'll end. One is, just to repeat, the Bhagavatam is making a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, and Vedanta Sutra is summarizing the message of the Upanishads. So we're being assisted by Srila Prabhupada in his purport to understand the meaning of the Upanishads properly, through the medium of Srimad Bhagavatam, through Devahuti's prayers to Kapila Dev. We may not know the Upanishadic verse. That's okay. We're getting the conclusion, proper conclusion, through the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the potencies, back to something that's in the first paragraph, the potency of Shabda Brahman, or Shabda Muladvat, is the absolute truth, Krishna, is revealed through that sound, if we have our receivers on. And the receiver on is indicated by you engage in devotional service. It's like if you chant nicely, there's a natural byproduct. You want to serve Krishna, because that's what chanting does. It awakens their desire to be in Krishna's service. And as it matures and matures and matures, it comes into higher stages of bhakti. Rasa and bhava and prema and all those nice things. But the prompt is Maha Mantra. Please engage me in your service. And then mature and mature and mature. So how carefully, attentively we engage in this very simple practice of chanting the Maha Mantra attentively, consciously, hankering gradually, as you know, for clarity in terms of our spiritual identity and Krishna's spiritual identity and our relationship with him. Not only, you know, the services that we do and how to do the services that we do nicely, but, you know, even more intimately, our relationship of love with him in the eternal sense, along with the temporal. it naturally brings one to higher stages of Krishna consciousness, if we chant attentively, and if not, Bahu Janma Kariyati Shravana Kirtana. You won't get the love of God that's meant to be given through the chanting of the holy name. And one other thing, last thing. This pastime of the Lord's creation, which Devahuti chooses to focus on first, has other dimensions. These features of the personality of Godhead that she's speaking of, they are secondary features, and then the primary features, just like the primary names of the Supreme Lord, are names that are indicating his relationships with his devotees. It's very similar to the discussion yesterday, that evening, Kunti Devi's describing different, some people say, the unborn is born for this reason, that reason. Her reasons are primarily personal relationships with Vasudeva Devaki, with King Yadu, and so forth. He's bringing glory to his devotees by appearing in relationship with them. And these features of Krishna are primary. And the primary names and the primary description or consideration of these names awakens love for Krishna. Just like in Lord Chaitanya's discussion with Ballabha. Ballabha wanted Lord Chaitanya to hear his description of the meanings of the name of Krishna. What did Lord Chaitanya say? Who knows what Lord Chaitanya said? I don't know any meaning of the name of Krishna other than Nanda Nandana and Yasoda Nandana. Indicating, it's a Sanskrit rule, direct meanings must be taken unless it just doesn't make sense or it's inappropriate. Then you have to take a secondary meaning. But you don't go for secondary meanings unless you're just a scholar that wants to show off your scholarship, which was the problem with in this particular exchange. He wanted to show his scholarship. I only know the direct meanings, thank you. Nanda Nandana, Yasoda Nandana. And compliments of our great acharyas like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's given us so many songs that's just primary names. Then interspersed here and there are some secondary names, but it's primarily primary names. And we sing these songs on a regular basis. Compliments of our founder Acharya, which we wouldn't even know about these songs if it weren't for him. So our Acharyas and the Srimad Bhagavatam and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu want to bring us to the stage of love of God, not the stage of liberation, where we're neutralizing involvement with the modes of nature and karma. They want to bring us to this love of God stage. So it helps a lot if we want to go there. And then if we want to go there, we'll carefully, attentively perform these activities of hearing, chanting, associating with one another, katayantash chamam nityam, troshyanti cha, ramanti cha. That's what we'll do. Okay, any discussion? It's after 8 o'clock already. Yes?
My thinking about someone who thinks that the Supreme is impersonal.
Mm.
And I found myself thinking yesterday that someone who doesn't accept scriptures, how do I convince them that the Supreme aspect is personal? But I found myself unable to do that.
It depends on the person. I mean, I'll give you a few. You know, there's common sense. And some people don't have any. So it's a little difficult. But, you know, one of the common sense ones that Prabhupada would repeat is, do you have a father? Sure. And did he have a father, and who was his father, and so he had a father, and he had a father, and the source of everything is the Supreme Father, his person. Here's another one. It's common sense. If you say the absolute truth cannot fill in the blank, then how is that absolute? Well, you can't have personality, you can't have form, you can't have qualities. Huh? Then that's something he cannot have, so he's not absolute. He's not complete. Now, my dear friend, that also means that he has an impersonal feature or aspect. Otherwise, he is incomplete. So he has that aspect. He has the personal aspect, too. And they're different features of the absolute. But we'll go circle around again. If you say, no, he can't, this and that, or the absolute truth can't be person because, then not absolute. It's incomplete. Then there's some other common sense, just like the example of the train and the example of the mountain. So one, from a distance, you can see in the distance on the horizon, you can't tell if it's a cloud or a mountain. You get closer, oh, it's a mountain. And then keep going. Then there's variegatedness. There's different kinds of trees, and there's this and there's that, because you get closer. Then you go up the mountain, and there's a little cabin, and inside the cabin is a guy that lives in the cabin, and you meet the guy, his dog Fido, and you know, there's personal feature in that mountain. Just keep going. Doesn't mean there isn't, you know, the impersonal feature, but keep going. It's incomplete. Keep going. Good for you. Keep going. And then another is on the authority of the scriptures. So, you know, the classic one from the Bhagavatam, Rameti Paramat Meti Bhagavan Iti Shabhyate, or Bhagavad Gita 14:26, Brahmano hi pratishta aham. This Brahman has as its pratishta aham. Its foundation or basis is a person. The oneness of effulgence comes from an effulgent. Do you know of any effulgence that exists without an effulgent? So, you see, to him, this person, depends on the person. My experience with such persons is, it's very similar to speaking to a born-again Christian. You end up in the same place that you started from. Unless you accept Christ, you know, you go into the bad place. Yes.
I was wondering that, as you were saying, the Absolute Krishna himself doesn't take part in the material creation.
He does and he doesn't. It's a contradiction.
So I was wondering, we also hear that, Prabhupada mentions again and again, that it's mentioned in Brahma Samhita too, that Krishna doesn't touch the material energy, it's actually Lord Shiva, which is Krishna's incarnation, so that touches the material energy. And we also hear in Bhagavatam that Lord Shiva came out of, because of the anger of Brahma. Am I confusing something here? Like, can you shed light on this? That what is the role of, like, how does Lord Shiva come here? And how does he play a role in creation?
He's a servant. And he has a master. And servants fulfill the will of the master. That's what servants do. So that's what he does. That's his role. And his role is primarily it's destruction. But, you know, he's the ruling deity over false ego. He's the ruling deity over tamagun. Ultimately, he's a pure devotee and he can give devotion to the Supreme Lord too. So you've got, like, you know, he's a complex personality. And depending upon the function of service, he has different residences. That's another part of his complexity, because of different services.
So when it's mentioned that he's in touch with the material energy, whereas Krishna is never in touch, we hear it in Bhagavatam again that Lord Brahma came from the navel.
Well, that's, you know, how did you get in the house? You came through the door over here. So did you exist before you came through the door over here? Of course. Same with Lord Shiva. That's how he appeared. There's different ways in which Lord Shiva appears, by the way, because there's different universes. That's the one that we read about in the Bhagavatam, but there's different ways according to the scriptures. That's the, you know, primary one that we hear. That logic, or the, you know, the confusion is similar to the confusion that says Krishna is an avatar of Vishnu. Therefore, how can he be the source of all avatars? Because he's an avatar of Vishnu. That's how he, you know, comes into the universe. He can come into the universe however he likes. He chooses that one. But he's the source of Vishnu. He exists before he comes into the universe in Krishna Loka. He just comes that way. Not a contradiction. Well, Vishnu has four hands, Krishna only has two hands, so Vishnu must be greater. That's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Some people think like that.
The final part.
Yeah.
So how is that he's not in touch with material energy?
Indirectly. Through his energies. And through those who are carrying his energies. Indirectly. Prabhupada's example is the factory owner. He's out on the golf course. But everything that's going on in the factory is under his energy. He's not in the factory. He's out on the golf course. Not directly. Indirectly. And it's far more so in the case of Krishna than the factory owner. He's within every atom. No factory owner's within every atom in his factory. Yes.
Maharaj was saying we are dependent on Absolute for everything.
Yes. And just isn't it nice?
So just thinking independent is illusion. So you are also saying that only through bhakti we realize our dependency. So the degree we have.
Well, bhakti is a manifestation of acknowledging the fact that we're dependent. It's not exactly what you said. It's not that we can, through bhakti, only realize our dependence. It's self-realization and God-realization occur simultaneously. So it's incremental awakening of both. Let's be real. We have some understanding of our dependence, and we have some false sense of independence operating at the same time. In our less than and perfect stage, something and something. We're engaged in bhakti to the degree that we understand we're meant for service to Krishna. Then, to that degree, we're operating in the bhakti realm, and to the degree that we're thinking, something else. The internal potency is not something we're in touch with. We're in touch with the external potency. Degrees up and down, like the discussion yesterday evening. The sine curve, up and down. So through bhakti, Krishna can be realized, and in that realization, the understanding of our dependence increases. Then the resentment of being dependent diminishes. Okay. So we're done. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Good.